Hi there, welcome to the OSLA podcast. My name's Todd Fraser and I'm here with another episode from the 21st annual ANZIC CTG conference from Noosa, Australia. And joining me this morning on the podcast is Carol Hodgson from the ANZICS Research Centre. Carol is well known to many listeners of this podcast and she joins me today to talk about the Excel trial. Carol, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Todd. Lovely to see you.
So you're here to talk this week about the Excel study, which is looking at is a registry, effectively, of patients on ECMO. So it's fair to say ECMO has exploded in the last decade or so, hasn't it, from what was a high-end rescue therapy now to more and more mainstream, is that right?
Absolutely. So, you know, the hospitals are funded to provide ECMO services. It's relatively good funding. I think everybody's interested in being able to provide an ECMO service to salvage patients who perhaps wouldn't survive on conventional life support. So, yes, it absolutely has exploded. And I think that what we're finding is that there's more and more indications for the use of ECMO. It is potentially life-saving, so in a young patient who otherwise has no hope, it's very exciting that there is this opportunity, but it does mean that it's being used in cases where we don't know if it's the best for the patient, it's difficult to understand how we select patients or what the complications might be, and I think that we've got a lot of work to do to really tease out how we use it most effectively.
So one of the rationale behind the registry is to start to answer some of those questions. Can you tell us about the registry and how it will operate?
Yeah, absolutely. So perhaps if I tell you how it came about would be the best thing. So I sit on an international ECMO network committee. I'm on both the executive committee and the scientific committee. And one of the main things that this international organisation wants to do is to improve research for ECMO to improve patient outcomes. So there has been, I've worked very closely with Professor Eddie Phan from Toronto, who is setting up an international ECMO network registry called INDEX. And essentially, Excel is part of INDEX. So Eddie and I have worked for 5 years trying to work out how we will embed clinical research into an ECMO registry across international sites. And it's been, so the Excel funding, we were very fortunate. We had support from the International ECMO Network as the Australian New Zealand arm of this international registry. We received partnership funding from the National Heart Foundation and from the NHMRC, and all of the major ECMO centres also put in money into the registry. So the major ECMO centres being the Alfred, RPA in Sydney, St Vincent's in Sydney, the Prince Charles Hospital, Geelong Hospital, all put in funding to help support the registry. And then we also had in-kind support and partnership from ANZICS, the Intensive Care Foundation, so some of our larger national bodies in intensive care medicine. So the plan is to pay a per-patient payment for sites to add data from ECMO patients into this registry. And from that, we will learn how much ECMO is being done in Australia, which we actually don't formally know. ANZICS, through the APD, have a little bit of information around this, and they will obviously have the whole of the nation. We're getting very detailed data, though, enough so that we can actually run trials through the registry. So we've essentially got the partnership set up, we've got our protocol set, we've built our registry, our report form, we've tested it at the Alfred, we've enrolled a couple of patients now, and what we're hoping to gain from this is some understanding about which patients should be selected and when, the timing of ECMO, the outcomes of ECMO from different volume centres. A little bit about how the staff who run the ECMO programs at each centre are trained and whether we need to support them better to do that. And then what are the outcomes in terms of complications so that we can reduce, for example, at the Alfred we did a study and we found that 50% of our transplant patients actually had lower limb disability in the year after ECMO. So is there a way that we can reduce those sort of lower limb complications or, bleeding, major bleeding complications? So we're going to look really closely to see if we can look at factors that will predict a good outcome and that can help us to decide which patients we should select, but also look at outcomes around trying to improve the actual service that we're providing. So we've got great buy-in from everybody, KICM, ANZICS, the Intensive Care Foundation, as I said. All the ECMO centres are on board, and I think the really lovely thing is that because all of the major ECMO centres got on board, everybody who's now doing ECMO is happy to be involved. I think we've got 25 sites have now signed up and have expressed interest. There's a $500 per patient payment while we have the funding, which is for the next 3 years, and then we'll seek future funding to try and keep this going. We've already embedded a couple of clinical trials into it, which is really exciting. So we've got one randomised controlled trial, the Blender RCT, which is led by David Pilcher. And it's a randomised controlled trial looking at conservative versus liberal oxygen targets during ECMO, VA ECMO. And we've also embedded a study which Hergen Busche is leading from St Vincent's in Sydney, where he's looking at bleeding and anticoagulation and clotting factors and things, and we'll be able to give him some data. So both of those trials will have a little bit of extra data collection, but most of the data is actually just gained straight from the Excel registry, which is fantastic. So we've, you know, sort of got it up and running. So we only got the funding last year. We've already built the CRF, started to enrol patients and embedded trials. So I'm incredibly proud of the work so far.
So one of the things that you mentioned was that this is part of a wider network of mm-hmm. research and data collection. Was there challenges in standardising that data across those different networks?
Yeah, so we're still working on that. Actually, the challenge is not so much in standardising it, because Eddie and I have worked for 5 years planning what should be in it and what could be in it. And I'll get back to the standardisation of the data. The harder part has actually been in getting the funding for the international registry. So that's probably going to be industry supported. And we've had contracts going to and fro between Toronto and industry partners for quite a long period of time. So I'm really hoping that that gets up and running soon, because essentially, you know, our data is meant to be, as you say, much larger and part of an international cohort so that we can really compare our outcomes to, for example, US practice or European practice or, you know, other parts of Asia even. The data itself is probably, I'm not sure yet, because essentially we don't have the international funding, so we haven't built it. But the plan to date is that whatever we've built in REDCap has, you know, Eddie and Dan Brody from the International ECMO Network sit on our management committee. We've agreed the data points. They've helped us to build it in Excel. So I'm hoping that we can just export our data dictionary and they'll use exactly what we're using. And there may just be some minor international differences around the way, you know, data needs to be captured. So that's the plan so far. And, yeah, I'm just really keen to work on the international funding so that we can grow this. I think one of the key things that I haven't said that is worth mentioning is that most ECMO sites submit data to ELSO, the Extracorporeal Life Support Organisation. Within the Excel registry, we've actually worked with ELSO to capture the ELSO data points, so people don't have to double data enter for ELSO. It means that they'll get a per patient payment, they enter once into Excel, and we'll actually export the data. So we use a site identifier that's identical to ELSO, and some of our data points are identical to ELSO, such that that data can be siphoned off and sent straight through to the ELSO registry, which I think is really nice and minimises time. We've also tried to align with the APD so that we're minimising time for people having to collect data. But I also think it's important that we're using research coordinators. So I guess ideally what we would start to do is use clinical information systems and gather this information very automatically. But some of it, how to identify major bleeding versus minor bleeding or things like that, I think that it's really helpful to have the research coordinators who understand a data dictionary, they look things up very carefully, they will complete a CRF very carefully, and I just think that that really, in Australia and New Zealand, the quality of our research data is fantastic, and it's mainly because we employ ICU research coordinators who really understand the importance of, you know, the correct data and the correct data definition.
So for those of us who are naive to the concept of a registry, it sounds a bit like a big Excel spreadsheet, but of course it's a lot more than that, isn't it?
Well, originally it did look like a big Excel spreadsheet. Yeah, no, so I've had some fantastic help, and we've got a few people on our team who I should mention. So I've got Natalie Linke, who's our project manager, and Dan Engler, who's our project officer, and Vanessa Singh, who's our data manager. So the three of us, the three of them and myself, have worked really closely with our whole management committee to try and come up with the best way to capture data. And it's really been, incredibly cooperative process, working. We've had several research coordinators on our management committee to help us inform the most sensible way to get the data and the easiest way to get the data, and streamlining the data collection so that we're not sort of trying to collect double up on points or whatever. We've also worked with the ECMO clinicians to really come up and with best definitions. We've not just worked with the ECMO clinicians, we've actually done a lot of background work here. So Aidan Burrell from Alfred has been working on systematic reviews of ECMO, how patients are selected, the definition behind that, the definition behind the types of ECMO, the complications that are reported in the literature, how people have defined that. So we've actually, and you know, he's on second round revisions for his first paper, but we've actually done all of the work to look at in the literature how that's best defined. And then we've been working on an international Delphi, a core outcome set that all ECMO research should report and should use the same definition at the same time point so that we can start to compare practice internationally in all of our ECMO studies. So our international Delphi is also on second round revisions. We've got a little bit of work to do to get that one published. So hopefully, you know, we'll resubmit that in the next 4 weeks or so. But then that means that we've got systematic reviews informing our work. We've got a core outcome set that we've already included into the registry. And we can sort of, as I say, start to report things in a very similar way. So it's been, as I say, it's been a five-year plan. It's not something that we've come up with slowly. This is a real program of research that we've worked on very closely with international partners, but across Australia and New Zealand, with really lovely buy-in, as I say, from all of the major ECMO centres.
So I was reading something in some of the literature that you provided for this discussion about the growth of ECMO over that five-year period. It's extraordinary numbers.
So we have really great US numbers, and we certainly have numbers captured within ELSO, but I think that actually underreports what's being done, because not all sites report to ELSO. And in Australia and New Zealand, we've only recently added ECMO data points into the adult patient database. I think it's been in, correct me if I'm wrong, Sue Huxon, but maybe for the last 12 months. So I think we're still underreporting what's actually being done. And to be fair, I don't think we know exactly across Australia how many ECMO patients are being managed in our intensive care units. And I guess I also want to add that that's the ones who make it into the intensive care unit. There's a huge growth of ECPR, where the patients might come into the ED, be managed with ECPR, ECMO, CPR, and not survive and not make it to the ICU, and they would never make it onto the registry either. So, you know, we actually probably have no idea about the number of ECMO patients at this point in time. We just know it's increasing.
So there's a lot of questions, as you've highlighted. What are the key ones that you would like to see answered in in the early phases of Excel?
That's a great question, and that's the question not for me to answer. It's actually for all of the site investigators to answer. So the way we wrote this grant to the NHMRC as a partnership was that we were going to go and do qualitative work at each of the sites to define what they thought was the most important problems. So we've spent the first 6 months of our grant building the registry and getting our data points right and making sure we have a protocol and ethics and governance across our sites. Now that that's in place, we have got the site surveys coming back from all of the sites. So for the last 12 months, they're going to report to us how many ECMO patients they managed, whether it was VAVV, ECOR, ECPR. They're going to report a bit about who had ECMO training, how that training occurred, whether they have an ECMO protocol, whether their site follows the protocol, what complications they report. So we're going to get a whole lot of information from this site survey, and based on the information coming back from that, we're going to look at it and we're going to go to the sites and we're going to say, these are the things that we identified from the national site survey. Now we want to ask you, which bits do you want to start focusing on first? I think that some of that may be around training our clinicians, educating the clinicians, and some of that, of course, has to be very practical training, simulation training. Vin Pellegrino, who already runs a lot of the ECMO sim training, is part of the management committee, and he will be responsible for looking at that data and working out what needs to happen. So we have the support of the college and we have the support of ANZIC. So if there are recommendations around rolling out online modules, videos, competency training, whatever that needs to happen around that. if it's about actually which patients go on to ECMO, I guess what we'll do is we'll pull all of the guidelines and we'll have a look at how people are currently selecting patients, and then we'll try and evaluate the best evidence, and there isn't great evidence so far, so we'll try and evaluate it. But then we will do some qualitative studies and work with the sites to make sure that everybody agrees about, you know, if we don't have good evidence, we'll go to a consensus and we'll work out what we want to do as a nation, how we want to provide this service across Australia and New Zealand.
So with such an invasive and very expensive therapy like ECMO, one of the key questions has to be, how do we appropriately distribute such a resource? How does that fit in?
So we don't know the answer to that either. So many questions. But we have built into the registry some economic data points. So we're going to capture the number of times patients go back to theatre, the number of blood products that are used. So the things that are really expensive in ECMO, probably the most expensive thing in ECMO is staff. So we're capturing how the units provide staff to support an ECMO patient, whether that's two nurses per patient or, you know, 1.5 nurses per patient, or, you know, it might be only one nurse but with an ECMO specialist nurse supporting them. Or, you know, we're going to actually evaluate the costs of the staff. We're going to evaluate the costs of theatre, invasive or other sort of radiological mm-hmm. interventions. We're going to evaluate, as I said, blood products and other drugs, and then we will try and come up with some sort of costing. And I guess the start is that we have no idea about the cost of ECMO at this point in time. So we will start with trying to cost it properly, and then we'll evaluate, you know, how we decide around patient selection versus cost, and whether there's any sort of signs about good outcomes, whether we can predict who's likely to have a good outcome. So our primary outcome for the registry is actually disability-free survival. So we're following up all our patients, which, as you know, I love patient-reported outcome measures. So for 12 months after ECMO, we're following up our patients, and we're using the call centre at Monash University with trained staff to do a full assessment of their quality of life, disability, using the World Health Organization Disability Assessment Schedule. And if they agree to some further tests, we'll also do anxiety and depression and cognitive function. You know, it's quite exciting. It's a big job. We're hoping that we'll have over 500 patients in 3 years. And then I guess I hope that we'll get more funding so that we can keep on embedding more trials into a registry like this.
Yeah. Carol, thanks very much for joining us on the podcast today.
Thanks so much, Todd. Lovely to be here.
Thanks for joining us on Osler Podcasts. For more great podcasts just like this, visit our website at osler.force.com.